The record button has been pressed, and I'll do the intro this time. Okay, but I can't clap because my hands are full.
Okay.
So would you count us in?
3, 2, 1.
Hello, and welcome to Crackpot Theories, a podcast where everything is plausible until proven otherwise. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Circa, and that was the intro we meant to do last time. Never forget.
It's okay. Listen, variety is the spice of life, so it's nice to mix things up a little bit every now and then. And, I mean, last week's episode was very mixed up, even by our standards.
It was great, though. I went and rewatched The Omen. It was wonderful.
Do you know what, though? Something that I was meant to mention on last week's episode, and I completely forgot, is we have to talk about the really eerie coincidence that happened.
The eerie coincidence?
Do you not remember the literal day that the Godzilla episode was uploaded? There was a giant dust storm sweeping across America that they called the Godzilla storm.
That was insane. That was the most eeriest coincidence I've seen in a very long time, because it was literally, I think, was it the day that it went up or the day that we recorded that it was like, are you serious?
It was the day it was uploaded. I didn't even realize until I posted the link on Twitter, and I was like, hey, go listen to our newest episode. It's about kaiju causing natural disasters. And then it's like, here's a natural disaster literally named Godzilla. Trending on Twitter.
Maybe you can predict the future now.
Oh, that would be cool. No, no, it wouldn't actually. Nothing good ever happens to fortune tellers.
Anyway, speaking of the supernatural.
Ooh. This is a you theory this time. I'm excited.
This is a me theory. And I don't have as much practice as Sinead. She is our all-knowing book of knowledge. So this is my theory that struck me at 3 o'clock in the morning when I couldn't sleep. So
that's when all the best theories happen, is 3 o'clock in the morning when you can't sleep.
It is. It's the witching hour. So, have you ever seen or heard of Winnie the Pooh?
Of course. It's, I actually really dislike Winnie the Pooh as a franchise.
What?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just never liked it.
Podcast over. Sorry, goodbye. Friendship ruined.
Friendship ended with Surika.
I absolutely love Winnie the Pooh. I have watched all of the episodes. I'm contemplating getting Disney Plus so I could watch more Winnie the Pooh. It's one of those wonderful shows that you can just put on in the background and just feel happy and youthful and relaxed like a Sunday afternoon. It is a wonderful show, and I will be hearing no bad things talking about it except for the theory I'm about to tell you.
Okay, well, your feelings are very valid, Uwu, so I will say nothing bad about Winnie the Pooh for the time being.
The popular theory of Winnie the Pooh is that the Winnie the Pooh and all that are supposed to be Christopher Robin's toys.
Yeah.
I think this is bullwhacky. This is false. Incorrect. The truth is, Winnie the Pooh and all of the residents of 100 Acre Woods are fairies trying to steal Christopher Robin, as they are secretly changeling-type creatures. And basically, ooh, the fair folk.
That is very, very plausible and horrifying when you think about it too much. But I suppose in one way, I mean, these are not the kind of Disney fairies that we're talking. This is the real old country fairies, where they're more akin to demons than they are to actual sparkly pixie dust type fairies that Disney made so popular.
Because you see, the 100 Acre Woods and Winnie the Pooh is set in England. Like, I don't ever think that it's brought up which particular part of the UK, but there is an awful lot of mythology in both the Irish, UK, and just in general Britannia as such, of the idea of changelings or fairies that will come and bewitch children, try and befriend them in the overall arc and goal of stealing them away to replace them with another of their kind, so like replacing them with the changelings themselves. Mm. So I was spending a lot of time researching this, because the more I dug into it, the more I was just like, hot damn, we're on to something here. My red string was flying. I ran out of push pins several times. I'm pretty sure the government is looking at me now, just like she's onto something.
She knows too much.
So, first and foremost, it's set in the UK. There is literally a stone in Cornwall called Men and Toy, I think. It's a place that has these circular stones that is said that if you put a child through it, it will return as a changeling and stuff. Ooh. So it could be set in Cornwall.
That's pretty valid, yeah. And that sounds like an actual fairy ring.
It's an actual fairy ring. They haven't been able to figure out where these stones came from. It's like a lot of places in the UK do have random stone formations, like Stonehenge, of course.
Yeah.
But in particular, in woods, there does tend to be unusual stones, like the Cornwall stones, of just spooky, fairy-esque. In the 100-acre woods, there is a giant upside-down rock, which is suspicious because that means fairies.
Okay, yeah.
But to get back into the actual details of why I think this is this, if you look at the designs of the critters in 100-acre woods, we have our main character, Winnie the Pooh,
mm-hmm.
who is supposed to be a bear that eats honey. Now, bears are not really known to be super into honey. Like, you'd hear an awful lot of bears eating, like, or attacking beehives and stuff like that. But they're not actually going after the honey as its primary reason for going there. They actually eat the bees and the larvae and all of the protein and stuff that is made from the actual nest. They're not going primarily after the honey, although it's obviously who doesn't like honey kind of thing. But
I'm not a big fan, to be honest.
It's sugary and delicious.
It always tastes a little bit too strong. But I know for a fact that royal jelly is incredibly nutrient rich, and bears... Mm. Most bears need an awful lot of nutrition-rich food before they go into their hibernation cycles.
It's true, but they wouldn't necessarily be going for the honey alone.
That's what I'm saying, is they're looking for the royal jelly as well. Like, it's just basically a beehive is absolutely full of nutrition. It's defended by thousands of bees.
Oh, not the bees! Not the bees! But if you look at Winnie the Pooh just in general, he doesn't have any claws, he doesn't have any bear characteristics apart from maybe his ears. If you think of real life bears, they're usually brown or black or really dark grey. You get like white polar bears and stuff like that. You very rarely, if ever, come across ones that are bright yellow.
True. Very
that
true.
That is suspicious.
Yeah.
Now, if you look at, say, Piglet. Piglet has no trotters, and he doesn't have, like, the stereotypical piglet tail or anything like that. He's also very, very small. Like, most piglets do tend to be quite small. But in general, Piglet is particularly small. And why would a pig hang around with known predators such as bears and tigers, which have been known to eat pigs? But yeah, he's just like, he's chill. He doesn't mind anything like that at all. And where I'm getting with this, I have more on Tigger and Eeyore and Rabbit, but I thought I'd make this point in general.
Well, that is a very good point. And of course, a piglet doesn't really look like a pig either.
He doesn't. Like, he doesn't have he doesn't walk on all fours. He isn't, like, shoulders built up like a pig would be. But what I'm kind of getting at is that it's not like they look like actual animals, but more what a child would think an animal would look like.
Yeah, they very much look like a child's drawing of an animal.
fairies and the changelings probably took these forms as they thought, oh, what does a pig look like? I remember seeing a picture of it, like that Christopher Robin drew. It would look like this.
Mm-hmm.
They're out of proportion, and that's what brings me on to Rabbit, which has always annoyed me. Rabbit looks the most like a real animal. Yeah. However, if you look at the size comparison to whenever you see him with Christopher Robin's supposed to be about maybe 4 or 5.
Yeah.
And the average height of a 4 or 5 year old is roughly about 100 centimetres, 107 centimetres, which is about 3 foot.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a rabbit as 2 foot tall?
At a push, maybe a jackrabbit, those really weird ones that live in, like, the American deserts. They're terrifying, though.
They are. The closest you'd even come to getting in any way near that size would be a hare.
Yeah, big time.
But hares are also incredibly aggressive. You wouldn't be chilling around with a hare. Like, they're more likely to be going for you than, say, a rabbit would. But also, you never come across yellow rabbits.
Big time. And a little point here, actually, is that back in the sort of pioneer days, they used to think that a hare, coming across a hare, was a witch's familiar.
Yes, very much so. Rabbits were really associated with witches and around the fertility of, like, in Druid times, that rabbits were supposed to be magical as such. If you wanted to promote fertility, you would keep a pet rabbit and things like that. It was supposed to be connected to mythological and superstitious things.
Big time, yeah.
But it's the only one that actually looks in any way like what they're supposed to. Like, if you look at Eeyore as well, Eeyore clearly has the rough head of a donkey, but it has no hooves. It has no, like, the proper constituency that you would have as if you were a donkey. And you see its tail, it's nailed into it.
Yeah.
Which is not well at all. It's very unusual, even for if it was a plush toy, to have something nailed into it. That's very suspicious.
I mean, if you look at it this way, right, if this is kind of based on a drawing that a child did, then maybe this child never actually saw a real donkey, but has played the game Pin the Tail on the Donkey. So maybe the child just assumes that all donkeys have their tails pinned on.
And then again, there's no tigers in the UK. There's no wild tigers just rocking about. There's no, like, kangaroos.
Yeah. Either.
It's a very unusual group to have together, and, like, owl as well. The size of owl compared to, say, Winnie the Pooh, which was supposed to be a bear, it must be a gigantic owl.
Yeah.
If Winnie the Pooh was the size of an actual bear, owl itself would be about 4 foot tall.
Do you know,
ridiculously sized owl.
One thing that kind of always bothered me about Rue whenever I was forced to watch Winnie the Pooh is that she has a British accent.
She does. It's very, very disturbing.
Yeah, how does an Australian animal end up with a British accent, unless it's like a transplant? But again, you know, if we are kind of thinking that this is a creature that has been conjured based on the recollections of a small child, then, you know, the small child isn't going to know to give an Australian accent to an Australian animal.
Exactly. So if you look at the designs, they do very much are very reminiscent of what a child would describe an animal as, but not necessarily a real animal. However, they're treated as if they were real animals, because you see Winnie the Pooh going around and he's eating honey. It's physically going into him somewhere. And in one of the episodes, he puts on a load of weight and he can't get out of Rabbit's hole. And I'm like, that... yes, Rabbit's... I said that. I went there in a Winnie the Pooh episode.
Oh my god, I've spent too much time in the wrong parts of the internet, I guess.
But it's not something that would be physically possible if these were stuffed animals but would be, it would signal that they were actually living creatures.
Yeah.
Because if you're sitting there and you're feeding a stuffed bear honey, it would be not only really sticky, if it was left, it would start to rot, it would start to decay, there'd be a smell, it wouldn't be a good idea to fill a real stuffed bear full of that much honey. And, like, where does it go? How do you get it back out? But you see him eating so much of it that it would say that there is a whole digestive system going on, which would say that it was living. And that's why I don't think that they're, like, I don't think that they're toys. Because you never get to see Christopher Robin's house.
Yeah.
You never see his family. You never see any of the creatures of 100 Acre Woods actually being indoors. So a thing with fairies, and it's kind of almost like vampires, a lot of fairies need permission to pass a threshold. So if they were actually fairies, there would be a reason why Christopher Robin never brought them home.
Oh, yeah.
Because if it was actually his toys and he was out in the woods just playing pretend, you would bring your toys home. You wouldn't want them to be left out and get wet. You wouldn't want them to get destroyed or lost. Because if they're your toys, you want to bring them home with you.
Yeah.
But he just leaves them in the woods.
Just as a little tangent, you know, I mean, like, I know how attached kids get to their toys. There was a post a while back on Mum's Net. This mum had, her little girl was after losing a jellycat toy, a really specific jellycat, because jellycat is one of the teddies that you get children when they're newborns, you know, and it kind of stays with them for most of the rest of their life. The kids get very attached to them. My nieces have a rabbit and a zebra ones. They just, it goes absolutely everywhere with them. The zebra is called Cha-Cha. It's very cute. But this girl, this woman, her little girl was out with her little toy fox, and she dropped him somewhere, and they went back looking. They couldn't find it. And she was looking for it. It was a discontinued one, and nearly impossible to find. And the daughter was inconsolable. And I just, I sent her a message, and I just said to her, listen, if you really can't find it, just let me know. I'll needle felt you as much of a copy as I can for that one, and I'll just send it in the post with a little note that said, the fairies decided to play with your toy because they liked him so much, but they accidentally made him really small. Anyway, here he is back. And then I do like another little needle felted mouse or something, just as a kind of consolation prize. Just to kind of play around with the fact that kids are so attached to these toys, you know, that you wouldn't kind of leave it behind unless it was an accident. And Christopher Robin seems to leave them behind all the time.
Yeah, he's never inconsolable when he has to leave them behind in the woods, which for a 4 or 5 year old, leaving behind their favorite toy, like Winnie the Pooh is supposed to be their absolute best friend, you wouldn't go home without them so willingly.
Mm.
You know, if even trying to separate a child in the house away from a toy that would be their favorite would be nearly impossible. But Christopher Robin just leaves them there, and it might be because they're not allowed back. As I said, fairies need permission to cross the threshold, and that's so he couldn't physically bring them back. And the fairies are probably like, no, no, we'll just live here. It's fine. Like, if you even look at their houses within the 100 Acre Woods, they're very unusual for, like, say, what you would assume a bear's house to be, what a rabbit's house would be, what an owl's house would be. There's just an assortment of random furniture, and like, Winnie the Pooh lives under a different person's name and things, and there's just random pots and pans about, bits of furniture. It's very unusual. However, in some fairy mythology and just folklore in general, that fairies are very known for stealing random objects.
Oh yeah, big time. They do say that whenever anything goes missing in your house, the fairies took it.
exactly. Like, if you leave anything out that's unwanted, a fairy's going to steal it. Like, they're crafty beggars. Like.
There's also another thing that says if you leave something out, like food or milk, that they'll start giving you gifts in return. So you start finding random things on your doorstep.
Yeah. That's the whole thing, that if you want to keep the fairies on your side, you leave out a tray of milk for them and they'll give you good luck and do good deeds for you. And if you stop, they'll get really angry at you. And
yeah.
You'll have loads of bad luck.
Yeah, I'm sorry, this is another random tangent, but it's connected to Disney. So, like the whole thing with Maleficent in Sleeping Beauty, obviously in the original tale, she wasn't given a name. But she was one of 12 fairies that were supposed to be invited to the feast to bless the child. And she got incredibly angry because they forgot to put out a gold plate for her, and they put out gold plates for all the other fairies. And she got so insulted by this that she cursed the child, because from the mythology that I have been reading, fairies are incredibly shallow. They can really only experience very surface emotions. So when they react with anger, they don't really think about the consequences and such. They react with anger and they'll curse you without, you know, stopping to think, is this fair or anything like that. It's just, you have crossed them and you must be punished.
They have a completely different set of logic.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't want to wrong them or anything. That also brings, like, Christopher Robin is constantly bringing Pooh honey.
Yeah,
so he's constantly bringing a fairy food.
Yeah, he's making an offering. He probably doesn't realise it, but he is making an offering to them.
Yeah, and like when you look at the 100-acre woods by itself, 100 acres is a big-ass woods. Like, it would be, how many football fields would that even be? It would be massive, and not something that you would necessarily just have in your back garden.
Yeah, it's I suppose you could call it one of those alien geometry things, in that it grows and shrinks according to what they want from Christopher Robin.
But that's the thing. Fairies are notoriously good illusionists.
Yeah,
if true. They've already decided to look the way Christopher Robin thinks that they should look, who's to say that they aren't completely controlling the environment around them as well? Like, in a few of the episodes, you get to see maps of the 100-acre woods. And it is never as big as what 100 acres would actually be. And then in other instances, it's significantly bigger than it should be.
Yeah. That like, is funny.
It's like the TARDIS.
Remember in the last episode, we were kind of talking about how hands-off Damien's parents were.
Yeah.
Like Christopher Robin's parents, do we ever see them?
No, they never are. I don't even think they're mentioned, actually.
Wow. But what about like a nanny or a governess? Who is responsible for this child?
Occasionally he goes to school.
That's still not saying much though. I mean, obviously if he's out cavorting in the woods with who knows? Who he's cavorting in the woods with. I mean, for all his parents know, he could be doing ritual sacrifices in the woods.
With the fairies.
With the fairies, yeah. Like, that's, you know, I'm almost thinking that if this is kind of a normal, well-brought-up child, that these are not individual days that
no.
Christopher is going back and forth. This is all one long stretch of time, because as they are illusionists, you know, time is an illusion of human perception. They could warp it.
They can make everything just appear differently. And this brings me on to my next fact.
Okay.
There are instances where they're going around the 100-acre woods that they come across different areas that would be impossible to actually exist in, like, in not only in a woods, but just in the UK and stuff.
Oh, wow.
In one of the episodes, they get brought to the land of milk and honey.
Yeah.
Which appears to be an entire different country.
Oh.
And there's like as if I can remember correctly, there's like Aztec themed architecture. There's vast amounts of milk and honey, literally, and it's a completely fantastical area that wouldn't exist unnoticed in a woods. And while 100 acres would be incredibly huge for a child or for anybody, an adult would have come across it at some point if it did actually exist. But it would be very possible for the fairies or Winnie the Pooh and friends to create the illusion of this area.
Yeah, and I guess this probably does feed back into this being they're taking their cues from a child's perception of things, because obviously you hear about the land of milk and honey in the Bible, which yeah. Christopher Robin has probably had to listen to being read a bit. You know, if he's a relatively upper class child who comes from a good household. And then the fact that there's like Aztec style architecture, I mean, he could have been reading about it in school.
Yeah. And like, how many kids' books do you come across that would have stuff about like El Dorado?
Yeah. And of course, I mean, the time setting at the time, if this is, you know, Victorian England, this was in around the time there was a lot of exploration going on. We kind of touched on it in the terror episode.
I don't necessarily know if it's set in Victorian, but it seems more post-war.
Oh, really? Okay.
It's maybe in the 40s, so roundabouts.
Edwardian,
like.
Maybe. Yeah, there was still a lot of explorers going, you know, a lot of exploration going on. That plane travel was just really becoming a thing. So you were getting, and actually Christopher Robin probably would have been getting the old, if this is the right time, those short novels about explorers like Biggles and like,
you know, Darwin and all that.
Yeah, exactly. And getting all this information back about the things that they've seen and the places they've been. And of course, if he's about 5 years old, he's really only seen the pictures. So he's no context. Yeah.
So he'd probably have heard of like the land of milk and honey, and he probably heard of El Dorado and thought, well, honey's golden. Maybe that's what it was made about, kind of thing. He probably put that mental connection together, and the fairies would have no idea what any of it meant. So they'd probably just put them together the way Christopher Robin would.
Yeah, completely. Like the fairies would have no idea about any of this stuff because they're so self-contained. But they're so kind of determined to have a hold on this child that they're kind of introducing the little things that he's interested in every now and then, because they probably only go to the land of milk and honey once.
Yes.
And then the next time they're off on an adventure, they go somewhere completely different.
Like, there's in one of the episodes, I think it was in the second or fourth season in like 1989, a long time ago, there's an episode called All's Well That Ends Wishing Well.
Oh, yeah.
Which has an episode where they're all making wishes by a wishing well. And one of them, I think it was either Pooh or Christopher Robin, wishes that he'd have more birthdays a year so we could have more birthday parties. And Tigger doesn't know what a birthday is because, obviously, if he's a fairy, he has no idea what a birthday is.
Yeah.
But he wants to have more birthdays, so he's on the search for Wishland, where you come across this entire new area in the 100 Acre Woods that they've apparently never come across before, and it's all like birthday themed, and there's like huge birthday cakes for Tigger and stuff like that. Stuff that wouldn't exist in any logical sense of the word. However, if they're all talking about this by the wishing well, it could be very possible for the fairies to use their magic to make this happen, to have this fun adventure and get the child on their side. It's like, oh, you want to make wishes? Tigger wants to make wishes too. Let's bring you to Wishland.
Yeah, it's super sneaky. I wonder, there was a really old poem that I think Christina Rossetti wrote about two people kind of running into fairies, and one of them stayed behind to party, basically, with the fairies. And they were kind of warned never to eat the fairies' food.
Oh, you never, ever eat the fairies' food. It happens as well in Pan's Labyrinth that... And I don't know if anybody who's listening to this has actually seen Pan's Labyrinth, but it's a movie by Guillermo del Toro. And they have a huge thing with the Pale Man.
It's yeah.
A creepy, creepy guy that you do not eat the fairy's food or he's going to eat you. And of course, she ends up eating the food because it wouldn't be a movie otherwise. But it's a great representation of you don't touch fairy's food.
Yeah.
It will change you.
It will. It kind of, you know, it makes you stuck there. You know, and that it's sort of addictive, like, and that you keep going back for more and more, and then you're less satisfied. Because it was a thing in the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe as well, that Edmund was kind of, and the White Queen in the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, she was kind of hinted to be, like, some sort of fairy. Well, they explicitly said that she was, like, Adam's first wife, that she was, like, a relative of Lilith. But that there was an aspect where she was kind of giving him food and drink, and once he had it, like, he felt really sick, and he didn't feel satisfied anymore until he got more of it. So she kind of enslaved him by giving him food. So, like, do we ever see Christopher Robin eating?
I think he might eat, like, some of the honey, okay. Like, when he's having it. I cannot recall off the top of my head. But I think there might be a few instances where they're sharing maybe cake.
Okay, yeah.
So it's suspicious.
That is very suspicious, yeah.
It also reminds me, as you were saying that about the Lion and the Witch in the Wardrobe, but something very similar comes up in Spirited Away.
Yeah, big time, yeah. And that, in order to make kind of Chihiro more present in their spirit world, they had to give her something to eat.
And the parents getting enslaved because they ate too much.
Actually, that's an even better point. Sorry. But yeah, there's that kind of like, you know, going from one realm to another, going from like the physical to the metaphysical. You have to be grounded somehow in it, and therefore they'll offer you food. And then once you have the food, you're stuck there. It's like it's in the Persephone myth as well. Persephone
yeah.
in Hades, where she eats the pomegranate seeds. Like it's in a whole bunch of things, and it's always really associated with the supernatural.
It's like there's a lot of instances of things that are very supernatural in Winnie the Pooh that just never gets addressed as being supernatural. Like a few of the colorful creatures they come across, of course, could not physically exist in real life. Like in one of the episodes, I think it was called The Back Sun, they had misread what Christopher Robin had wrote. He had said that he would be back soon, but they thought it said Back Sun.
Oh, yeah.
And they created this fantastical creature that had, like, he was bright purple, looked like a giant troll, had stripy arms and big fluffy head, and created this entire creature that they had never heard about from what they thought meant Baxon, of what a child would imagine if you heard of a monster would be, because they just saw that Christopher Robin had gone away for a while and were just like, oh, something must have taken him. It must have been this Baxon. They made this creature. But,
yeah, that's very fairy logic as well then, you know.
Yeah.
Because they're so shallow, they can't be reasonable about it. They just have to assume that something has kidnapped him, because that's what they're trying to do to him. They're projecting. Pure projection. You know the way when you're trying to get away from any feelings of any wrongdoing that you're doing, you'll project what you're doing onto somebody else and start accusing them of doing it. Not that I've, as far as I know, I haven't really done that. Everybody's prone to it to a certain degree.
It's a psychological thing.
Yeah, exactly. So I think nobody's really immune from doing that. But then for the fairies, it's probably taken to a real extreme, because their emotions are just so shallow that they immediately assume that because they're trying to kidnap Christopher Robin, this other creature must be trying to do the same thing.
there's another instances of that where, again, they misread a note, which seems to be a very common instance now that I think of it, where Christopher Robin went on his first day of school and they misread it as being a skull. So they go on this huge adventure throughout the Hundred Acre Woods to try find Christopher Robin, and they literally come across a giant skull cave, and this is supposed to be where Christopher Robin is. He did actually turn up in that cave though, so.
Okay, yeah, so they just is this happening because he's not very good at writing yet?
No, the notes that you see Christopher Robin write, he's very literate. It's the fairies, or Winnie the Pooh and friends. I keep calling them the fairies because I will not be convinced otherwise. But Winnie the Pooh and friends are not literate. Rabbit claims to be literate, but he's not, very, very clearly, in very several instances. He's like, oh, I can definitely read this. And he definitely cannot. Owl, however, does appear to be literate, which is a very interesting thing because owls are usually associated with knowledge.
Yeah.
And things like that. So, of course, he would be the one person that would be able to read out of them if, say, Christopher Robin thought, oh, a wise owl, like a wise old owl kind of thing. If his parents had said that to him at some point, he would assume that an owl would be the smartest of the bunch kind of thing.
Absolutely, yeah. But so then he's probably, you know, he probably puts on a good face of being smart. You know the way there's some people that you might think that they're smart until you get talking to them for a really long time and you realise they're not nearly as smart as they appear to be.
Like me.
I was just about to say like me, but... But yeah, like that's his perception of what a really smart creature would be, but maybe Owl just isn't as smart because he's still a fairy. So
yeah.
I guess, yeah, they can read, but they've got no reading comprehension, just like most of Tumblr.
They can probably read what the word is, but doesn't know the meaning of the word.
Yeah.
Like, if you've never heard of a school before, because that's... You wouldn't hear of a fairy going to school, but of course, if you were a human, you'd know what it was. So, of course, they'd probably think, oh, a skull! Because fairies would obviously know what skulls are, being sinister and all that.
Oh, this is another really weird tangent to go off on. I'm sorry, I'm the tangent queen this evening because you're doing a theory, and I'm not ruffling through my notes the way I normally would be, so I just keep thinking of new tangents. I'm really sorry.
But I'm the one ruffling through notes this time.
Yeah, but did you see that video of the little girl doing like a lesson with her two cats? She's got a blackboard and she's drawing a flower, and she's teaching the cats how to draw the flower, and the cats are just sitting there at this little table, sitting like human beings, with like pieces of paper in front of them, just watching her try to teach them how to draw a flower. But it's just like, you know, that's almost, it reminds me of that, because obviously the animals in Christopher Robin's life, because they're fairies, they've no idea of any of the things that are actually happening in his world, but they're humouring him, you know, in a way that's not necessarily as benign as these two pet cats just sitting and watching their owner draw a flower.
Well, the whole thing is that they have to get the human child on their side. They have to get the child to come with them, because a willing participant in their kidnapping is always better for their magical deeds.
Yeah, you know, I suppose I thought of that tangent because if there was one creature that you could ever pin being a possible fairy in disguise on a particular animal, it would be a cat. Because they also have quite shallow emotions.
And it's why they're always associated with witches as well. They kind of seem mysterious.
Big time. But yeah, anyway, so I'm really sorry about that tangent. Please keep going.
No, it's okay.
Don't let me interrupt you again.
I mean, in fairness, I interrupt you enough during when you're doing your theory, so revenge!
It feels good, actually. This is such a relaxing theory for me, because I'm just kind of sitting here holding the microphone, can of Coke in my hand. You know, it feels like I'm not actually doing any work. It's great.
It's like a lot of theories about when children get abducted by changelings and fairies and that. It's usually that they're not necessarily wanted children.
Yeah.
Like, it does tend to be if the mother had too many children, one of their children are more likely to be taken by a changeling and things like that. And a lot of the changing myths, when they came back in the day, it was to explain, say, attachment disorders, sudden infant death, autism, and that is like, oh, that's not my child, it clearly got taken away by a changeling, kind of thing.
Yeah,
because
the changelings were supposedly very badly behaved and out of control.
Yeah, that they were just problem children, so they used to say that their good child was stolen away, but if their good child was it actually a good child, it wouldn't have been able to be stolen away unless it got on the side of a fairy, because I don't know what a fairy would do forcibly taking somebody, because then it wouldn't be easy enough to change them into changelings as such. So you'd have to get a child that would be willingly given as such.
You know,
I don't know if I'm explaining that correctly, but it's all the thing about wisps as well that leads you to your destiny. It could also be it leads you willingly into the hands of a fairy, you know?
Yeah. Here's a really weird thing to connect the Winnie the Pooh to, but the manga and anime Berserk.
Now that is the most tangency of tangents.
not really, because there was that whole arc with the girl whose name I think is pronounced Roisin. Like, they spelled it Rosine, but I think it's meant to be pronounced Roisin, like the Irish Roisin, where this little girl, she was, you know, she was kind of born after an attack on her village. So she wasn't her father's child. She was the child of an invading soldier. And he hated her for it. So she wanted to run away to the realm of the fairies. But she ended up getting one of those, I think one of the eggs, the evil eggs. And it turned her into what she thought was a fairy and surrounded her by fairy minions. So it all looked beautiful. Like, she's a beautifully designed character. Gorgeous big sort of Luna Hawk moth wings and things like that.
Yeah.
But of course, this is actually the evil version. The fairies that you see depicted in that, they're proper demonic. They kill each other for sport. And then you only find out later that those are actually children that she has tempted away to become fairies like her.
Yeah.
It was a really good arc. It was probably my favourite arc in the manga. Incredibly bleak, like everything that happens in Berserk anyway. But it was just such a really good way to kind of tie that universe to actual mythology, in that it was spiriting away unwanted children to kind of dance forever in the land of the fairies. But of course, it had this really evil slant, because those the egg that possesses them, it only really happens to people whose desire is strong enough that they sacrifice everything else.
Yeah, because like, if you look at Christopher Robin, he never really mentions his parents, and nobody comes looking for him when he spends an entire, like, 24 hours in the middle of a 100-acre woods. Nobody comes looking for him.
He's very like Damien from The Omen, then, in that way.
But speaks with a British accent and is very, very friendly altogether.
Well, maybe just to the fairies. Maybe he has a completely different face at home.
True.
Now, I know for a fact that the real Christopher Robin, as in the one that the books were based off after they were written, and he hated being associated with the franchise, full stop.
Aww.
He got made fun of in school for it, and it just kind of haunted him. He absolutely hated it.
Kids are assholes, though.
No, I think it was more that it was his reaction to, he felt like his father had co-opted his childhood. And his father didn't really have that much impact. Like, his father was very hands off, but also took some, like, basically kind of took massive chunks of his son's childhood and put it into a book and therefore shared it out to everybody else, and he possibly felt a bit used.
Oh, that makes a lot more sense, actually, yeah.
Yeah, and, I mean, there's something then kind of funny about the fact that the father kind of wrote his son as being a real free-range child. You know,
probably was.
Here's another franchise that I'm going to slightly tie this to, it's Gone Girl.
All right.
Okay, so, I mean, the main character in that, the Amy, who is a functional psychopath, more or less. There was a whole thing where her parents wrote a series called Amazing Amy, which was supposedly about her, but it was like all the Amazing Amy books was about Amy doing things that the real Amy didn't get. So, like, she went to this prestigious school, but the real Amy didn't get the scholarship that she wanted. Or, you know, Amazing Amy won a tennis tournament. The real Amy got kicked out, like, second place. Stuff like that. And then the real Amy was incredibly resentful because the fictional Amy, she felt that was her parents, that was the child that her parents wanted, but they got stuck with her. And
yeah, that would mess you up, like.
Big time. And I think that's part and parcel of what maybe Christopher Robin's deal was, is that his parents were very hands-off. He had nobody really looking out for him. And so subconsciously, maybe his father knew that. And that's how he came across in the way that Christopher Robin was written.
Hmm.
And therefore, that then would mean, that would add a lot to your theory, because then you have an unhappy free-range child that wants to feel cared for. And so the fairies are kind of there going, come with us, we'll care for you, we'll give you everything you want.
We'll be your friends.
Big time, yeah, you know. And like, he does kind of get all of the bonds that he's probably not getting at home from the creatures in the 100 Acre Woods. And I'd say if they were purely imaginary, he wouldn't be as normal a child as he is.
No, because they couldn't be imaginary because they interact so much with him physically. Like, they can come up and hug him and stuff like that. They have real world effects to them. Like, when, I think there was something about a bucket lift.
Oh, yeah.
I think at one stage. So if they were imaginary, having one of them in a bucket and the other, like, and Chris Robin the other, it wouldn't work if they were just imaginary. So they would have to have some form of physical form.
Yeah.
You know, they couldn't necessarily be imaginary. But that's the crux of my my theory.
It's very plausible. It really
Winnie
is.
Winnie the Pooh is a changeling that wants to steal Christopher Robin away and disappear into the 100 Acre Woods, never to be seen again.
Hey, listen, maybe it would actually be better for Christopher Robin to do that.
He seems happy when he's with Winnie the Pooh. Like, in, I think it's one of the last episodes, they actually go to the Enchanted Place. That's Ooh. What it's called, the Enchanted Place, where they're just reflecting on their time together, basically. But yeah.
That's, there you go. Did you watch the film when it came out, the one that Ewan McGregor was in?
I didn't. I heard a lot of mixed reviews. Some people said that it was amazing. Some people said that it was awful. A lot of people said that it was really sad. And then other people thought that it was just a cash grab. So I didn't know how to feel about it. Because I love Winnie the Pooh so much. In particular, like, the real old school Winnie the Pooh, like the ones from the 80s.
Yeah.
Don't know how I'd feel about a new take on it. When it seeing all the trailer and stuff, it looked more like Paddington. Yeah. You know how they did that movie? And I don't know. And it made it out that Christopher Robin was an asshole. And I don't know.
Well, you know, the real life Christopher Robin, I think, he went on to fight in World War II. And I think he came back with shell shock, which we now know is PTSD.
Oh, the poor thing.
So it probably would have been better for him to have been taken away by fairies.
That's really sad.
Sorry. But then, I mean, you can also say, like, that's a metaphor for him kind of being taken away by the fairies and then replaced by a changeling. It's, he came back from the Second World War a changed man.
That's very true. War changes people.
War. War never changes. What is it good for? No, sorry. That was me going off on another tangent. But no, I like this theory. I really enjoy this theory. It's been very interesting listening to it.
When it struck me, I was literally lying in bed and I couldn't sleep. I was piss and sweat because it was really hot out and I couldn't sleep. And I was just thinking, I was like, oh, I have to go back to the bunker. I should really get my red string about something. Wait a second.
That
Winnie the Pooh is up to something. Nearly sat bolt up in the bed and it was like, Winnie the Pooh. There's definitely something going on there. That's not all as it seems.
But you see, this is how all the best theories happen, is they're kind of like almost like a shower thought.
It was kind of like that. And then the more I looked into it, the more I was just like, do you know what though? This is definitely legit. Like, it was like, especially being set in England, and England and Ireland having such a history of folklore with fairies and stuff, and the fact that it was set in the woods, and the fact that like Winnie the Pooh had a pseudonym and stuff like that, it just seemed to fit too much of a coinky dink, and how they didn't look like real animals, yet they didn't even look like toys even, because like as I said, if you look at Rabbit looks like an actual rabbit.
Rabbit looks like one of those demonic jackrabbits that you find in the US when you're shining torches on things.
Exactly. So you wouldn't really see a 4-year-old having that much of a scary toy.
I don't know. There are some toys the kids have that are really, really scary. You know, like those electronic ones that just randomly turn themselves on? So you start thinking that there's ghosts in the house because you hear them like 3 o'clock in the morning. Hello, Puppy Collie, now you come to play with me.
I have one of those that I had to take the batteries out of. I have a Pinkie Pie toy for My Little Pony.
Oh, yeah, you got the possessed Pinkie Pie.
It has, like, this bobblehead thingy on it, and that's not the terrifying part of it. The terrifying part is it occasionally shakes and giggles, and it happened at random intervals. I think it was because the battery was dying, so it would just be sitting on the shelf. Oh my god. This needs to be removed very swiftly from this house. Call the exorcist, like. So I ended up taking the batteries out of her because that was truly terrifying, sitting down at maybe like 1 a.m. about to go to bed. And was like, come up.
Well, I mean, we could do an entire episode about cursed children's toys because there's so many of them.
So many of them, oh my god.
Especially like I know that the doll that the Annabelle series is based on is an actual Raggedy Ann. Like, it is just a literal Raggedy Ann doll, but it's supposedly incredibly demonic and cursed, and it's kept behind a glass case and nobody's allowed to touch it. But when you saw the actual Raggedy Ann and Andy film, where, for whatever reason, the animator decided to do 48 drawings a second instead of the usual 24. So the whole thing just comes off as incredibly cursed.
It is. I remember we were having a party once and we ended up getting really drunk and watching that. And it's now part of my paralysis demon.
Where'd you go? Where'd you go? What did you do and why?
There's no need for it to be that HD in movement. It's just wrong. It has the uncanny valley effect where it's like there's too much movement going on there. Your eye can't process it. And it's very cursed.
It's incredibly cursed. Okay. I think I'm going to have to call this episode to a close now before we get even more out of control. Do you want to finish this episode off, since it was your episode?
Yes. Thank you all for listening to my solo theory. I know they're rare and far between, because I don't have the research ability the same way Sinead does, but I hope you enjoyed the Winnie the Pooh is a changeling that's trying to steal Christopher Robin theory. It was very fun. We are on Buzzsprout, we are on iTunes, we are on most places that you can find good podcasts and bad podcasts, and our podcast, which is somewhere in between. We are on Twitter, we are on Tumblr, we're on TikTok. You can see some of Sinead's really fun animations that she's been doing of our episodes up on TikTok. They're really cool. Go check them out. Leave us a review if you liked us, if you didn't like us, if you think Winnie the Pooh is actually a Cthulhu monster, or if you think he really is a bear. Let us know. We would love to hear from you. And this has been Crackpot Theories. The truth is out there, and it's significantly more honeylicious than you would think. I'm Circa.
And I'm Sinead.
Bye, and we'll see you next time and next week.
Bye.